You're listening to the Mortich Mag podcast on RTRFM 92.1.
The wrong key there, Jim. Never mind, you're back.
Good morning, Jim here from Mortich Mag on RTRFM with my copper over there.
Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, listeners. How are we today?
Oh, man, I don't know about you, but I'm on a real high today, Nick.
Well, it's overcast and cloudy out there.
It's nothing to do with the weather.
But it's great that you're on a high, and I'm sure you will filter out that high and hopefully get us on a similar level.
Woo! Yes, of course. Well, everyone knows the Royal Commission is currently implementing some of their recommendations around the institutional child sex abuse. And we also hear in recent times where the Catholic Church have been held accountable in $2.45 million for a man who was brutalised in their care. And we're here just about every day, I think, you and I, Nick, of the tragedies in our world about people who have suffered at the hands of missionaries, government, people in care. Even now we're talking about institutions as far as, well, prisons and the deaths in custody recently. I mean, nothing goes past us, and even the Australian Parliament is investigating historical child sex abuse. So it's everywhere around us. And I'm just really thrilled to hear that whilst $2.45 million was awarded to a gentleman, non-Aboriginal, from the Catholic Church in recent times, and good on him. I think that's a great achievement for anybody who's gone through that sort of abuse. Obviously a big court case around that, but Nick, an Aboriginal man this week.
An Aboriginal man.
Has been awarded a lot of money, significant money. I dare not say the amount, but it's a significant amount, which has lifted our spirits a great deal, because so many Aboriginal people, from an equity point of view, have suffered at the hands of the protectors, chief protectors, missionaries, government. So I'm just really pleased that it's happened.
Well, and for me, I'm just reflecting that it would be sad for the gentleman or the lady that received this, that they would have had to put up with a lot of trauma, and that trauma possibly pass through the family. So it may be a great amount or an amount, but you know, that with that comes a lot of pain and suffering. But a lot of our people haven't got any of that yet.
Oh no, I think a lot.
So,
you're right, Nick. I mean, the more you talk about it, the more traumatised you are. And this particular family I've sat down with this week, and talking to the survivor himself, who's still in shock about this out-of-court settlement and he's what it means for him and his children. Because the lads have been on disability pension for quite a few years now, suffering from
a range of things.
Range of things, you know. And for him now to understand, even if he doesn't quite comprehend, I mean, who would think of, you know, this? We're talking lots and lots of money here. It's not anywhere near the $2.5 million, which the Catholic Church have awarded, but it's up there, and it's something that'll change the life of himself, his children, and I guess his extended family. So looking forward to talking some more about that throughout the morning, because this is actually a result of, historic abuse has been part of our history for a long, long time.
Yes.
It stems also from the 2008 redress that was applied in Western Australia for forgotten Australians, child migrants and stolen generation people. And you might recall us talking about this previously, where halfway through the process, the $80,000 that was on offer was halved to $40,000. And that's when they announced the Optus Stadium, and I probably shouldn't even be saying that now, because that's my opinion. It's not the radio station's opinion, but my opinion, because a lot of money went into that stadium. And don't get me wrong, I was at the stadium last weekend, and it's a magnificent stadium. But so the trauma, I guess, associated with child abuse can never really be understood unless you've, you know, been part of the process, whether you've been a victim yourself. I mean, we're hearing about the national scandal and how people are impacted by the suicide of that woman who wasn't able to get any closure from the senior legal person in the country. So it has a lot of implications, and I think a lot of people are, Nick, are probably traumatised by what they're hearing at a national level.
Yes, yes, it would be, Jim. And, you know, that just reflects back to a lot of our community, immediate family and extended family that that have been put into the missions and have experienced a lot of...
Well, you and I both know, as having this, you know, descendants of people removed, it's impacted on us.
It has, and also, you know, the economic disadvantage when a lot of our people were farmed out, basically, to the colonials for cheap labour,
settlers.
And we haven't had an opportunity to have real economic benefit in this country,
or participation.
Well,
yep. And we won't talk about stolen wage because Shine Lawyers are in town next week.
They're in
we don't
town
confuse
next week.
Our listeners. Was, yep. If you've tuned into RTRFM, Moody Schmag, we're talking here about the trauma associated with child sex abuse and the trauma associated with all community that have been removed from family, culture and language. I mean, that's been a large part of our lives, hasn't it, Nick? And you and I, as I say, we've experienced that. So it's going to be interesting to see how that progresses, because I'm just hoping that this good news that people are hearing today on RTRFM and on Noongar Radio and listeners will say, well, wow, this is something different. But it also will encourage our people to make a stand.
To make a stand and make a constructive stand, because for so long our pain and suffering and our voice has been ignored. For so long, we haven't understood the process of going forward to get some action or redress or accountability, and that's, you know, that's created a lot of issues out in our community. Where, if for my, you know, for my own immediate mum's family, and that they just turned to alcohol, to deal with all that trauma, but the system out there was just not helping. Whereas hopefully now there can be that shift and a positive light, so that you know, more of our community can get out there and follow this web through in terms of trying to get the compensation for the wrongdoing that was done by them or their family.
That's right. That's right. I mean, the Royal Commission, from what I understand, there's a 10-year window for people to actually sit down and talk to their legal advisors and others to think about what the processes might be to receive some sort of closure in what happened to them as children. So this is, you know, we need to understand that. It's nothing to do with the 2008 redress, because that wasn't about child sex abuse.
That's right. Separate.
The Royal Commission, and as a matter of fact, we've got a guest on the radio shortly who was a commissioner of that Royal Commission, and he's going to be on.
Although it would be very confusing with a lot of our community about the different,
of course,
the different options of redress and Royal Commission and that stuff to understand, and that in itself for me lays another layer of confusion or understanding around, well, which one am I going for, which one's active, and which one's not, so that it creates more stress, I guess,
and confusion. Well, I think that's so, so I guess the important thing for us to understand, and even our listeners, that, you know, the community's had a win.
Yes.
Even though it's acknowledging years of child sex abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So we can now, I think, appreciate that the system can work for us. The system can work for us, and we can encourage our people who may not want their family to know, or their siblings, their grandchildren and children, to appreciate what sort of trauma they've been through. Mm-hmm. So it is a fantastic situation, and, you know, I'm looking forward to our guest today. We've got a West Australian of the Year on our program shortly, Helen Milroy. That's has probably a lot to say about this subject, but I know she's coming to talk about her book.
Yes.
We have Robert Isaacs, who is a long-term public servant who is living up in Broome now and wants to talk about a book that he's written. Nick, it's time that you and I wrote a book.
Someone said to me the other day, you know, you should write a book. Well, I go, well, what am I going to write about? I'm going to write about my own story.
Right,
but then again, that's what it's about, eh? People writing their stories.
Without delay, we should welcome Helen Milroy to the program. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning, everyone.
My co-host is Nick Abraham, a strong Wajuk man who does Welcome to Country on radio every morning here. So thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Good morning, Helen. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Okay. I don't think you need any encouragement to talk on radio because, of your background and what you've done. But just for our audience out there and some of our listeners that may not know who Helen Milroy is, just who's your mob and where you're from?
Yeah, so my mob are from the Pilbara. We're Palku, so around the Marble Bar region, just a couple of hours out of Port Hedland. And that's my grandmother's country. That's where she was born. However, I grew up in beautiful Whadjuk Noongar country in Perth. So I absolutely love the Perth region and very grateful that the Noongar people took such good care of this beautiful country because I love living here.
Oh, wicked. Thank you. Welcome.
Helen, thanks for being on the show. This wasn't our doing. It was the management of RTRFM on the launch of a book that you've written recently. I've been wanting to get you on the show for a long time. I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time, but it's been so difficult. Now that I've got your mobile, Helen, you're dead meat, girl.
Change that number, Helen.
Yeah. So, Helen, thanks for being on the show. You've written a book and you've done a lot of writing over the years, but tell us about this book around child trauma.
I'm not sure which book you're referring to, but the books that I've published recently are really kid stories based on Indigenous storytelling, and it's really about allowing children to see themselves reflected within the broader ecological framework, that is nature, and to see themselves in those sorts of relationships which are so important to well-being. So not just relationships with people, but relationships with animals and birds and country and the universe, and that sense of us all being related and us all looking after each other. And I think my whole purpose with writing books for children is so that they get that broader sense of attachment. And rather than thinking about nature as something that they look at or are curious about, but something that they have a relationship with. And so they have that sense of connection and they have that sense of caring. And I think that sometimes gets a bit missed, but I love the way that Indigenous storytelling can achieve that. And so if kids are feeling traumatised or have had difficult experiences, having that sense of connection and that broader attachment system is something that builds resilience and helps with our social and emotional well-being.
Wow. So, I mean, I was partly right, but it wasn't just about child trauma, about interaction with animals. Well, that throws a different light on the subject. So I'm just amazed then that you find the time, Helen. You're such a busy woman, West Australian of the Year, and your work around the Royal Commission into Institutional Child Sex Abuse I would imagine has kept you very busy, and I guess you're glad that's all over. But okay, so the book's available through where? It's available now to buy?
Yeah, so I've got several books out. There are some that are available through Fremantle Press, and that includes Wombat, Mudlark and Other Stories, plus my books about birds and bugs that we all live alongside in our backyards. And the other books are through Nangabala Books from Broome, and that's a story about bush mob, which is a group of animals that live together. Just on the point of creativity, though, and on writing and storytelling, it's actually good for everybody's well-being to have those sorts of things that we do, because when we're most stressed and burnt out, we often forget about being creative, and yet that's the time when we need it the most, because it helps us see things in a different way and it helps to keep us well.
Well, that's very interesting. Wombat, what's that? That's not a Noongar. That's not a West Australian animal.
So no.
How did you get to talk about a non-West Australian animal? How did you get to write about it? I mean, this show's on Noongar country, of course, and it's repeated, and Noongar radio listeners will be listening to us as well. So how did you get to talk about a wombat?
Well, I think I've worked with children and families for many decades, and I think that you start to see different kinds of personalities. And so when I was thinking about how I would sort of represent children's personalities and their really positive strength-based attributes, I thought about what animals within Australia, of course, across the whole of Australia, might represent that. That's how Wombat came to being, because if you think about good old Wombat, he sleeps a lot. And he sleeps with the earth. And so his special relationship, of course, is with Mother Earth. And so those kids who have sort of those kind of attributes are those kids who are our dreamers, our creators, and have a special place because of that. And so I developed the sort of stories based around how children could view themselves in a positive way. I think from being in clinical service, in child mental health services for a long time, children often get labelled very negatively. And this was about trying to help children see themselves in a positive way and find their unique place.
That's something you've just mentioned there that I'd like to draw out a bit more. You talked about clinical. Academia then, you're a trained psychiatrist?
Yep, so I'm a child psychiatrist. Currently I'm the Stan Perrin Professor of Child Psychiatry at the Perth Children's Hospital in the University of Western Australia. And I've been in child mental health now for decades.
Helen, how many people of your qualifications are there in Australia that are First Nation or Aboriginal? Do you know? I mean, this is we're privileged to have you on the show because they're
very unique.
It is something. I mean, we have psychologists, but there's very few psychiatrists. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. There are very, very few First Nations people who are psychiatrists, and there are very few who are child psychiatrists. There are a couple. In fact, we have a wonderful Noongar man who's a child psychiatrist. He's a forensic child psychiatrist, so he's very unique because that's a complete one of a kind. And his name is Marshall Watson. He's a colleague of mine and a fantastic fellow, and he's done a lot of work for our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids who end up in the juvenile justice system.
Well,
trying to get them, helped in a very positive sort of strength-based way as well.
Well, thank you for saying his name there, Helen, because Jim was looking at me and I'm looking at him and we're going in that silent mode of who's that fellow? We try to thank you for naming him because it rests our mind now, who it is.
Exactly. And unfortunately, some of our mobs do end up going elsewhere. I think I've tried really hard to get Marshall to come back to Perth, but he's very happy in South Australia, unfortunately. But he's doing a fantastic job over there, and I think that's the thing, isn't it? It doesn't matter where our mobs end up, as long as they're doing a fabulous job, then we're all very proud.
That's right.
Alan, it sort of just brings me to the point of, you know, saying congratulations. It's work that a lot of our community, and I'm talking about our listeners now to RTRFM, I've been told that there's thousands and thousands of listeners out there today, and I've even been told 100,000 listeners, not to put you off or anything, but so a lot of people are listening today and thinking, Helen Milroy, okay, West Australian of the Year, okay, but psychologist, a specialist child psychologist. Our program, Mudich Mag, Helen, I must say, is about really passing on good stories about our community because there's far too many bad stories about our community. So I'm really privileged. I'm feeling privileged today to have you on the show. Now, so tell us more about this book. You're saying there's a series of books and they're available at Mugabulla, but also other reputable...
Fremantle Press.
But through other mainstream book...
All the bookstores, I think, have them. I'd be very... Look, I just think that promoting Indigenous storytelling, Indigenous ways of storytelling is really important because it's actually good for everybody. It locates all children within that ecological framework, and I think that's good for every child growing up in Australia. In fact, it's good for every child growing up in the world.
Mm. Helen, I've had the privilege of seeing your presentations on PowerPoint and the many presentations that you've done in many different venues over many different states, and it's always been very colourful. I mean, the artwork that you've displayed has been amazing. So obviously that's going to be then transferred into your books as well, your artwork?
Yes, that's right. And in fact, one of the things that I had to adapt, of course, when I was doing the Royal Commission was because I was travelling so much on planes, I couldn't actually take my paintings and canvases with me on board. So I had to learn how to adapt. And, of course, there's always something new you can learn. And so I've started using the digital art platforms, which I think is actually fantastic because you don't have to wait for the paint to dry before you fix up your mistakes. You can just do it immediately and you can get a great result. And I think for kids in particular, being able to use that technology from quite a young age means they can just explore this whole new way of doing art, which is just fantastic.
Right. Look, we've got Helen Milroy, amazing Aboriginal First Nation person on RTRFM. If you're interested in having a yarn or telling us about what you think of the show, 0405 921 921 is our text number. Helen, can I just change the subject for a moment? We talked about the Royal Commission, and I don't know whether you had the chance to listen. We've had success this week where an Aboriginal man has had a huge win of his child sex abuse, and I think you'd be delighted to hear that. We can talk more off air about this, but what is the window of opportunity for victims to claim some form of compensation? I've been sort of telling people it's a 10-year window. Is that right?
Yes, look, from what I understand, that's right. However, there are different ways you can try and pursue compensation. I think things have changed significantly since we did the commission, hopefully for the better, and it has made a lot more, brought a lot more understanding and awareness about these things. And certainly for men, as you probably know, it's quite difficult for men to come forward. There's a lot of barriers. And with the Royal Commission, we found that on average, people didn't speak about these things for well over 20 years. And so even being able to come to the point where people can even feel like they can tell their story, there can be a significant delay, which meant that then looking at compensation and those sorts of things became very complicated because it was well down the track. But hopefully that's sort of changed now and people are more able to speak and more able to sort of come forward. So I hope that's been a really positive way forward, and that's great to hear that someone's been able to get that successful claim.
Helen, sorry to change the subject. I mean, it was it's one that I felt you wouldn't mind commenting on because it's this particular payout that's been awarded this year is probably the biggest compensation claim for an Aboriginal person in the country. So yeah. I'm going to talk to you some more if you don't mind about this because there are other issues around that that I wouldn't mind some sort of advice on. So so appreciate your comments, but it, you know, the subject was you're writing a book and now I've managed to swing it another way. So Helen Miroy, thanks
and
for...
If I could just say before you go, I think I'm incredibly grateful to the absolute courage and bravery that people showed in coming forward with their stories to the Royal Commission. We couldn't have achieved what we achieved without that. And I think that that goodwill that everyone showed us was just absolutely amazing. And I really thank them for that.
Helen, I want to thank you for changing your way of life to a degree, because writing of books for children must have been therapeutic for yourself.
Absolutely. It was one of the ways I coped with all the trauma stories. So, yeah,
I do it in different ways too. I try to sing, but people tell me you can't sing, but I love my karaoke. So Helen Miroy, appreciate you being on the show. Congratulations on your book writing and love to talk to you some more. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Helen.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Nick. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, Helen Miroy there, writing of children's books, and as you heard, was a Royal Commissioner into Institutional Child Sex Abuse. If anything we talked about today has caused you some concern, please, there's a number to ring, Lifeline 131114, 131114, because we take things lightly here, but we appreciate too that listening, you might feel that it triggers some trauma for yourself. Certainly Aboriginal people will, and... We understand that and appreciate that very well. Lifeline is available to speak to you if you have an issue, 131114. So wasn't it great to talk to Helen Miroy?
Well, Nick? I'm just sitting here in some of the things that she mentioned there and I go, wow, you know, that's very interesting, and especially with the technology and the creative arts, because a lot of our kids are very creative. But also, you know, what she mentioned about the men's process and when they've been... They hold and suppress it for many, many years.
Yeah.
And that could be reflected out in the community now.
And you and me, we're old people.
Well,
we're
older
people, Nick. And technology probably is a little bit...
We keep it at arm's
keep
length.
It at arm's length. But kids, children that might read a children's book, the inquiring mind of children, it's not to say the book, they can go anywhere and understand the technology a bit better and just really investigate more. And that's what kids are all about. I mean, it's just so important. So thanks, Helen Miroy, for being on the show on RTR-FM, Mordish Mag and Noongar Radio.
You're listening to the Mordish Mag podcast on RTR-FM 92.1.
Yeah, Jimbo and Nick here on RTR-FM, Mordish Mag, our show. Listeners on Noongar Radio would have heard about Helen Miroy and her achievements, not only in the Royal Commission, but writing of books. And I think that was really quite exciting.
It was. And, you know, it's very exciting to hear that, what was the word again, literature?
Literary.
So putting that knowledge into written form to help with the psychology and thing of our children and our communities. And that just sort of connects me back to... an event I went to on the week, throughout the week, that we went back and had a bit of a conversation about our totems and our Burungas.
What's that word, Burunga?
Burunga is where you get an animal or a plant, and that's part of your country
totem,
and what you have to look after. So very similar with the totems, and there is, and when we look at it, it's a very scientific process that's been around probably since the dawn of time in this country, mm-hmm. and how our people looked after this country, mm. and how they looked after our people. And just with listening to
the synergies,
the synergies, yeah. there, and thinking, wow, you know, but how do we understand that a bit more? How do our current generations, because of all the trauma and health issues and mental health issues of being disconnected, how can that assist in terms of that ancient scientific knowledge?
No, well, it only adds to what Helen talked about, and yes. how it's been therapeutic for herself being on the Royal Commission for so long. And she, she made the comment herself, you know, how appreciative mm-hmm. she was for people coming forward and talking about their trauma, and how difficult it is for men to do that.
And it would be very difficult, yes.
Mm. Talking about men and literary, we have talked to Helen Milroy about her books. I thought it was one book, but it was a number of books. And Robert Isaacs will be on the show a little shortly, and he's written a book, and yes. I think it's Two Cultures, but we're going to get him to talk a bit more about that. Now, Rob Isaacs was recently in the media about his experience at Clontarf.
Yes.
Clontarf, which is a place where a lot of people went, not just Aboriginal people, but mostly children that were forgotten Australians that came from overseas. And places like Clontarf, Castle Dare, Bindoon have had, Fairbridge have had very bad experiences for our people.
Yes.
So we've got Mr. Rob Riley on the line. Mr. Rob Isaacs. Rob, hey. Jim and Nick here.
How are you, Jim?
Oh, look, I had a tongue slip there and called you another name of one of our deceased people. Hello. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. How are you? This is Nick Abraham here.
No worries. How are you?
We're good.
Oh, look, we're fighting fit, and always good to have a show where so many people are listening in, and we get the occasional comment, great show, great to hear what you're doing there, because a lot of our listeners on RTR-FM really don't understand a lot of the issues that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, but also we have listeners on Noongar Radio. So, Rob, welcome to the show. We had Helen Milroy on earlier talking about the writing of her children's books. Now, you've written a book. Tell us about what you've written and why you've written, Rob.
Well, thanks very much, Jim. And can I do a welcome to my mob down there? Kaya Wanju, Wanju, Noongarbujja.
Wow. Well done, Rob.
Before we talk about your book, though, Nick's going to ask you some basic questions about your mob.
Well, you just basically just said it all there, Rob. But, you know, a lot of our listeners here on RTR-FM 92.1 will not know who Rob Isaac is, so just a matter of who's your mob and where you're from.
My name's Dr. Robert Isaacs. I'm a Noongar man, and I belong to three language groups. First of all, in the southwest of Western Australia, which is Bunbury, Busselton, Margaret River, down to Augusta. I'm connected to Widadi people, the Bibberman people, and of course the Wadja people in the Perth area. So they're the three language groups that I'm connected. But mainly brought up in the Wadja country in the Perth year, mm-hmm. because the reason for that is that I was placed in three institutions when I was a young baby, a boy growing up, St. Joseph's Founding Home in Subiaco, Castle Dare Boys Home run by the Christian Brothers, and of course Clontarf Boys Town in those days is named. And as you mentioned about boys being at these institutions, a lot of them did come from overseas through the migration scheme in the 50s, and there was only 8 Noongar boys at Clontarf in my opinion, only 8 of us, and a lot of them were well known. And but Clontarf was an institution that did supposed to look after the care, the welfare of each individual. And I'm sad to say that a lot of that was missing in our culture, in our way, where we didn't know what our identity was. We felt that we were left behind. We couldn't even leave the institution to go out into the bush to find our sense of belonging, you could say. And so all these years, I've been keeping this story to myself. And it was only since that I, in the last 10 years, knowing that I was going to retire from the public service and work, that I need to start putting a biography and put this book into some sense that people will read. The book has some good stories in it, but at the end of the day, I was able to collate a lot of information of the Isaacs family when I found out about great-grandfather of 1876 of the shipwreck of the Georgette down in Margaret River. And it was through that connection with our mob down in Busselton and Margaret River that I was able to bring this book to reality. Because when I was working, when I first started working in the government in 1973-74, Aboriginal people were just getting jobs in the public service for the first time. And I was lucky that that when I joined the Community and Child Health Services with Therese and my wife, I was working in the East Perth area where the Aboriginal Medical Service was first established. But I was working in that area and working alongside with other health workers doing surveys of each of the households that were homeless people and people destitute, breaking up marriages, were all living and congregated in these homes. In the third week of my my survey, I happened to knock on the door of the final week of the survey, and this old lady answered the door, and I introduced myself as Robert Isaacs, and she kept looking at my badge, and I said, "There's something distracting you." She said, "Yes. Are you related to all the Isaacs family down in Busselton, Margaret River?" And I said, "I'm trying to find my family, my mob." What this young lady, that old lady said to me, "So I'd like you to come back in 2 days later." In the meantime, she went down to a place around the corner from her home, which is a soup kitchen run by Aunt Eliza and Mrs. Isaacs and Samuel Isaacs.
Yes.
And walking around there, when they opened the door, there was a big mob of my family, my mob, in the soup kitchen there. Word got around, we call the grapevine in Nungawe, and there's I found my mob for the first time, because the native welfare people would not give me a razu as to find out why you were removed from mum at the age of 6 months in these institutions. They would not give you anything. They never visited me when I was at these institutions. So I was a loner along with many other boys and girls, and that we were lost. We were the lost and stolen generation.
Mm. Rob, wow. Thanks for parting up with that information. It might be a bit difficult for you to cover, but thanks for that. And so it led you to write a book, and I'm seeing Nick is getting...
I'm just... My little ears are pricking here, Robert, there. That sorry, Dr. Robert. That little soup kitchen around East Perth, was that far from Wellington Square?
Yeah, it's right next to the old Beaufort Street Hotel. As you go down...
Ah, yes. Street, okay, over this side.
That soup kitchen was it's right next door to the Aboriginal Advancement Council.
All right, yep.
Yeah, which is now Cottage Cafe, and yes. I don't know whether it's still operating, Robert, as it is, but at Noongar Radio is now in that where the soup kitchen is. So we've got listeners on Noongar Radio too, Rob. So again, congratulations on the book. What is it called? I think I said Two Cultures. Is that right?
It's called Two Cultures, One Story. And when I found out my Aboriginality, I was so proud that linking up with the family at the soup kitchen. But as my career developed in not only in the public service but in the Aboriginal community, a lot of people will come forward and say, "Robert, you know that you're related to so-and-so and so-and-so?" And I said, "Yep, I'm related to you. There's no problems with that. Let's get on with life."
So what are some of the highlights of the book, and what were you trying to reveal in this book? I mean, apart from finding your mob, which must have been so exciting for you, but also probably a little bit traumatic. But what other highlights are you trying to tell the public in your book that really is a strong point for you in your own recovery, but your therapy, really? What are the strong points?
Well, some of the points are, because of the stolen generation, that word wasn't used in those days until recently, a long time ago. Some of the parts were difficult, but I also enjoyed some of it. I had a tough upbringing mm-hmm. in the book, it mentioned that, but I didn't really know any better looking back. I know that some of the things that happened were really awful, but there were also a few happy times from my childhood, playing sport, working alongside my friends, who really became my family. I made the best of it all time. I'm really happy and proud of some of the latent memories, like helping our people, Aboriginal people, to better understand the health and the legal system, using my skills to encourage them to take ownership of their lives and helping so many families to move in. And I was lucky to, as you know, Jim, that with Rob Riley, good mate, and Jim, and many others, people in the other organisations, linking up with them and listening to them, using their experience, their talents, I was able to not be part of also the Aboriginal Medical Service. There were many organisations that that I sat on in the boards over the years, which put me in good stead to have influence in Aboriginal affairs. And why I say that is that I got two cabinet appointments in 1980. One was the chair of the Aboriginal Housing Board as chairman administrator, and the Aboriginal Lands Trust in 2 weeks. There were two cabinet appointments, first ever given to an Aboriginal person in the state. And I wanted to build on that so I can get Aboriginal people on board, or to these boards, which I did, and go statewide to spread the message about land matters, land rights, better health services, housing, employment, and so on. And so I was the book, it details all that in the book, that I educated myself in that area. I wanted to do that because education has played a very significant role in my public life and in my upbringing as a young boy. And I'm lucky that I went back to education. I went to the West Australian Institute of Technology, which is now Curtin University, along with many other young Aboriginal males and females. And I think the bridging course in those days, and many good courses would be, I think, Jim, you were there.
That's right, yes.
In those days, were very, very important as the first campus to provide these sort of courses to Aboriginal people. And, of course, I was lucky that I received a scholarship to go to the United States of America with other four students and to share our culture and our values with American Indians, the Navajo Indians, the Hopi tribe and New tribe. So coming back to Australia, back to West Australia, I built on that. And when I talked about having influence in government policy, I reckon I was able to change that. And some of those Wadjalas, some people did not like it. I can tell you, they had to put in the door. And when I put my foot in the door in front of them, they weren't very happy because I was getting my message across to government, whether it's Labor, Liberal. And then once I got into the Minister's office, I had more of empowerment, you could say. Empowerment is influence. That word, empowerment, is influence in government policies and Aboriginal affairs policies. And that's why Aboriginal home ownership that the government asked me to set up in 1995 has been a success and has been a winner for our mob. Getting home ownership into security or base security and owning your own home, it's an education thing, but I gave it all my heart and soul in that area, and that's why Keystart, the loan that where I worked for, they headhunted me to go over there to set up the scheme. And I was grateful that they asked me to come over, and it's been a very successful scheme for Aboriginal people.
Come on, Rob. Wow. Rob, we don't have the program's not long enough to tell us, for you to tell our listeners about your achievements. So we're talking to Rob Isaacs. I mentioned Rob Riley earlier, and I'm sort of screaming after that, but I'm glad you sort of came back and qualified who Rob Riley was, because our listeners may have heard his name before. So thanks for being on the show. Nick's got a question.
Well, I'm just listening to what you've done there, Robert. And even though I know your background and what you've done, but for a lot of our listeners out there, you know, you might come across as a quiet achiever, but that quiet achiever has really achieved quite a lot.
Mm.
And I'm proud of you.
Yeah, well, Jim, that's a good point you're raising there, because I didn't go around and Skype and set myself as a super person. I just people put their trust in me, and I went about it doing the best thing I could do for our community. And I'm talking about a statewide community, because we've got different language groups, so many different ways of dealing with culture, heritage, land issues, your health, housing issues. And so sitting on their turf and on their ground has been a rewarding experience to me, and that's why I did it quietly.
Yes.
I was never home half the time.
Lovely.
Rob, thanks again for being on the show. We've rung you in Broome now. Why are you in Broome? A strong Noongar man. You're connected to Wadandi and Wajak. And so what's happening in Broome? You've retired to Broome. Is that what's happened?
Well, you know, Teresa says hello to you, Tim too. You know Teresa well.
I do.
And I said 5 years ago, I came home from work one day at 5 o'clock, and I still had my suit on, and Teresa was chopping some food up there for tea. And I just said to her, Teresa, can I ask you a question? And she just looked at me, and I just said, I want to take you home to country. And she smiled.
Well deserved.
That's a bit of payback, so good on you for acknowledging Teresa. Hello to Teresa up there, and your interview will be played on RTRFM's website. If you and Teresa want to listen in, have a look at that. It'll be available on the website a little later today. Rob, thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate your input, and congratulations with the book.
And thank you, Robert.
Thank you. Good interview. Thanks, Jim. And say hello to everyone down there. You know, I do come to Perth quite often, but because of my commitments and boards that I sit on, you know. So mm-hmm. I haven't retired. I'm still there.
Lovely.
Thanks,
thank
Rob.
You.
Thanks for being on the show. You're listening to RTRFM. If you just tuned in, Moorich Mag, Rob Isaac's been on the show. A literary program today. We had Helen Milroy, a wonderful lady who was West Australian of the Year. And an amazing person, again, quite achiever, Nick, and now
yes.
Telling us.
Well, there's two quite achievers that are doing mountains of work out there for our community.
And there's a lot more that Rob could have said. There's a lot more that Rob could have said, you know.
We didn't have long enough, did we? But yes.
Well, he talked about the home in was it Subiaco?
Yes.
He talked about Castledare. He talked about Clontarf. You know, listeners need to know that 3/4 of the child migrants that came to Australia came to Western Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have a massive amount of removal of Aboriginal children from homes. You have a massive amount of people that were child migrants. 3/4 of them came to Western Australia. Therefore, Castledare, Clontarf, Fairbridge, Bindoon
yep.
were rewarded with child labour.
You're listening to the Moorich Mag podcast on RTRFM 92.1.